Okay, good morning, everybody. We have a great privilege this morning to hear from somebody that comes from the same kind of community that we come from, comes from Five Towns. We have the opportunity to hear from Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, who have a certain perspective on life and well-needed perspective that we need to hear often. But it's not so often that we get to hear from people who, coming from the business world, from the world of the layman, people who are involved in the Jewish community, but from the layman side, who have made a tremendous contribution to the Jewish community in that from that perspective. Someone who is an accomplished business person, a CEO of a company, of a home healthcare company, and yet has made the ikar of his life his involvement in the Jewish community, his own learning. Someone who's been to Siyam Shas many times through learning Daf Yomi, and the many shurim that he attends besides that. Former president of the Orthodox Union and now current president of the B'nai Zion, the B'nai Zion Foundation, which does a lot of things here in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure exactly how many things, but a lot of things. Okay. They have a lot of things. And you're going to hear probably more of soon, not in this speech necessarily, but so it's important for us to get a perspective of what are the main challenges that we face as an Orthodox Jew, as an Orthodox community, in the world that we're returning to. When we step foot outside of yeshiva, even while we're in yeshiva, the challenges are not subtly different inside yeshiva, outside yeshiva. But it's important for us to be aware of them so that we can prepare ourselves and to think about responses and how to rise up to these challenges. And I can't think of a better person than to address this than my uncle, Steve Savitsky.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. Firstly, Bishus, Rabbi David, it's a great honor for me to be here. Rabbi David, I had the chus of listening to so many of your shiurim on YU Torah, so I know a lot of the jokes already, so I've heard them, but they're great. Rabbi David brings a unique perspective, and of course, Rabbi Molshin. I really think this yeshiva is one of the finest yeshivas that I've seen for boys who are coming for the gap year or years. Chutz La'aretz, it's just the right combination of Torah, Hashkafa, normalcy, Zionism, understanding that you can be a regular person to really have the ikar of your life, to be Torah, mitzvot, avodas Hashem. And for that, I really salute you, Rabbi David, for building such a makam Torah and a makam Kedusha. And I've seen the products of your yeshivas for so many years now, and it's something to
tell you, Rabbi Elshin.
No, yes, of course, but I don't like to give him a big head, so I don't want to say anything about Rabbi Olson, of course. So, for most of you, you know, this is a very, very special year or years being here in Eretz Yisrael, being here in the yeshiva, and for most of you, the vast majority, I'd imagine, somewhere down the road, you will be going back to a different world. That world is a little different than the world you're in today. And sometimes people think that, you know, what you get here is enough to carry you forward the rest of your life. But it's really not, because I always think about, let's say a Yom Kippur, you know, like you're really thirsty or you're hungry, and then you take one bite or you take one drink and you forget all of a sudden, what was it like? Or it's freezing outside and you come inside and it's nice and warm, you forget what it's like. That's the way it is with us. We forget very quickly. So you can't store up enough. It's not like you're going to store up enough spirituality, Torah here, during a year or two here, to then have it for the rest of your life. It doesn't work that way. This is a great introduction and a great way to begin a new process, because all of you are at a certain age where you're now starting. You know, you're kind of starting a new chapter in life. People used to ask me when I was president of the Orthodox Union, like, you know, why do we spend so much money on teenagers? You know, why is that so important? And I said, because teenagers, not only are they the future, but teenagers are always on a go. You know, they want to go someplace. I always compare them to people in the airport. If you go to the airport, everybody there, except for the people working there, within 2 or 3 or 4 hours, hopefully, are going to be going someplace. They're going to Tel Aviv, they're going to Hong Kong, going to New York, going to... But they're going someplace. They have bags, they're packed, they're all set to go. And that's what you guys are also. You're all set to go someplace. You don't know where it is. You're not sure exactly where the gate's going to be, but you know there's a gate someplace you're going to go to. And so we're going to try to talk about this gate, and we'll talk about what life's like. You see, 70 years ago, this time of the year, we're almost getting to Yom HaAtzmaut, where we're now going to celebrate 71 years of the birth of the State of Israel. But for the last year, they've been talking about 70. 70 has been the big number. But Israel is actually 70 years old, as far as the world is concerned. So you're going to come back to America, and you're going to be back in a different world. So what was the world like in America 70 years ago? So 70 years ago in America, there were only 140 million Americans, and there were 5.5 million Jews. 70 years later, there are 340 million Americans, and there are 5.7 million Jews. Could you imagine that? In 70 years, while American population has almost tripled, we almost stayed the same. And that was with, by the way, an influx of almost 1 million Russians and Israelis who came. So what happened in those 70 years? In those 70 years, because of assimilation, intermarriage, American Jewry has been decimated. We should have had 13 or 14 million Americans now, Jewish Americans, but we only have 5.7, 5.8. Nobody knows exactly the number, but that's basically the number. And because of assimilation and the rampant assimilation in America, this is what happened. And yet at the same time, during those 70 years, our world, the Torah world, the Orthodox Jewish world, has multiplied and grown tremendously. Today, if you look in America and you read any of the reports, you'll find in the Pew Report and other reports that today Orthodox Jewry between the ages of 17 and 30, in surveys that were taken, almost 75% of the people who responded said they were Orthodox Jews. So the future is unbelievable. The future could be very, very bright for us in the Torah world. But we also can't forget the rest of the world, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But we have to understand what we're coming back into, a different kind of world. So, you know, when you drive on the highway, when you go someplace, there are always signs that you see constantly telling you, you know, watch out, there's a fallen rock zone. Watch out, there's a turn in the highway. There's a bend, there's a curve. Be careful. But what are the signs that we're seeing about life? Because you guys are going to go out into the world, so you're going to come back to America mostly. Hopefully, most of you will make Aliyah. I hope you do. Because there's no question that is the future of the Jewish people. The future of the Jewish people is here in Eretz Israel, even though there will be a very significant part of the world that will be left in America. And it'll be a vital part. And it'll be a vital ally to the Israeli government. Believe it or not, it's really an amazing thing, by the way. Something that I never thought I would see in my entire life. Because if you look throughout the diaspora, from the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, even before that, Jews in the world were constantly sending money to Israel. Constantly sending money to Israel. Israel would be unbelievable. You know that they need the money, and American Jewry, other Jewry, Russian Jewry, European Jewry, sending money to Israel to support the poor country of Israel. Today, do you know that the Israeli government is actually giving money to help American Jewry? I never thought I'd see that in my entire life. But they're nervous. What are they nervous about? They're nervous about the fact that they see what's going on. What's going to be in 2 generations from now? Who's going to support the State of Israel if not people who understand the chashivas of Torah and our right, our biblical right to the land? I was at a meeting maybe last year when I came. I come here every year, once a year for this time of the year, because I come for an organization. It's called the Conference of Major American Jewish Organizations. I don't know if any of you have ever heard about it. American Conference of Major Jewish Organizations. Malcolm Homeline, probably a person you heard of that, one of the most influential Jews in the world, is the chairman. And we come to Israel for 5 days, and we meet everybody that there is to meet, go to places and generals and so on, and they tell us about what's going on. Not that we understand it at the end, because we don't. Like a woman said to me one time after one of the conferences, I asked her, so, do you really think you understand Israel in the Middle East? She said, no, I'm more confused than ever, but at a very higher level. So that's really what happens. But I was there maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, when Avigdor Lieberman came to speak to us, and he walked around the room, and he had this big book, and he looked at it and he said, to the leaders of the American Jewish community, and B'nai B'rith, and Hadassah, and ADL, and APAC, and all these places, he looked around the room, and he said, what have you done? You've destroyed Jewry in America. Who's going to be left? And he pointed to me, I was wearing a kippah, I said, this guy will be left. His group will be left. What about the rest of you? You should be ashamed of yourself. What did you do? But yet we, the Torah world, is growing, proliferating, getting stronger. And that doesn't mean that we're going to be, ultimately, the victors. There are no victors here. There are just losers. Because we should feel bad when we find out what assimilation is all about. But 70 years ago in America, if you spoke to the really smart people, the sociologists, the demographers, the other people, and you asked them, what is life going to be like in 70 years? You know what they would have told you? They would have told you that the conservative movement would have been the winner when it comes to all the streams. Why? Because they were really avant-garde. They understood halacha. They understood that you could change things, but you could be really very, very American and so on and so forth. And they passed rules and regulations allowing people to drive on Shabbos and other things. And today there's nothing left. Today there's hardly anything left. So our world now is strong. The world of American Jewry, Orthodox Jewry is strong. But what are the issues? What are the challenges? What are the things that could possibly derail this freight train that's growing down and down and down? And so what I want to do, just in a few moments, to speak to you, give you some highlights of some of the issues that we're going to face in our world, the issues that you're going to face when you return. Because just in a few years from now, a very few years, most of you will be going back to school, getting degrees, becoming professionals, getting married, having children, and all of a sudden you're going to be part of this great big American Jewry scene. So what is it that worries me and other leaders in the American Jewish community? Let me tell you the issues. The first issue is an issue that you wouldn't believe. The first issue is an issue that I think is the most paramount issue in American Orthodox Jewry today. It's called the lack of spirituality. We have more people learning Daf Yomi, more people going to shul, more people davening, more people doing other things, and yet somehow there's something missing. And I see this as I speak around America, and I go to the length and breadth of the United States and Canada, and I meet with rabbis, not just modern Orthodox Haredi rabbis, they tell me the same thing. My balabatim go through the motions, but there's something missing. There's not a simchas achayim. There's something missing in the way they have their avodas Hashem. I don't know what it is. I don't know how we could give them this spark, this incredible spark they need for a simchas achayim, that they walk around every day and they say, wow, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky I'm a Torah Jew. I can't believe how fortunate I am. They don't have it. There's something wrong. There's something missing. We have to figure out how to fix that. Because you have to start to see, every day in your life, you have to start to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as your partner, as somebody who's there with you all the time, and have a relationship. And sometimes we don't have that. You know, I met some woman who said to me, I'm so busy being religious, I don't have time for God. Yeah, it happens. That you go through the motions day in and day out. But because you don't see, you don't vision, you know, you don't see a story that happens. I'll tell you a story. I think Rabbi Olshan heard it one time. I once told it over at a bar mitzvah. I have a Rebbe that I learned with in the Five Towns. Some of you are staying in Rabbi Spiegel, Rabbi David Spiegel. I used to learn Daf Yomi with him for many, many years. One day he comes to me and he says to me, Shmuel Yosef, he says, I'm mixed up. I heard something on the news today that didn't make any sense to me. I said, Rebbe, what was it? He says, I heard that there was a baseball player. And this guy, he played in a certain amount of games. And because he played in a certain amount of games, he never missed a game. The President of the United States came and gave an award. And they had a ticker tape parade. And I said, yeah, his name was Cal Ripken. That was his name. And he played for the Baltimore Orioles, and he played in something like 2,500 consecutive games. How many seasons that was? He never missed a game. He played and played and played. And he said to me, for that, he gets an award? I said, sure. He says, I don't know. It's an Olam HaFafach. He says, doesn't he get paid millions of dollars? I said, yeah, he does. He says, is the game like about 3 hours? That's it? I said, yeah. He says, and he only plays for 5 or 6 months? I said, yeah. He says, and for this he gets all these rewards? What are you talking about? It doesn't make sense. I said, that's the way it is. He calls me back later that evening. He says to me, Shmuel Yosef, he says, I figured it out. See, because he looks at things different than I do. He says, could you imagine what it's going to be like for Chaim Schwartz? He put on tefillin when he was 13 years old. He lived to be 105. And he never missed a day of putting on tefillin. Imagine, he never missed one day of putting on tefillin. And all of a sudden he comes to the Olam HaEmes, and he comes there and they go, banners, they're posters, they're ticker tape parades, Chaim. And we go, Chaim, what? You are the one who never missed one day of putting on tefillin? Yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see you. He wants to meet you. He says he can't wait to meet you, it's unbelievable. He says that's what it's about. Could you imagine? This gives us a little bit of an inkling of what it's like in the Olam HaEmes when you do something, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm waiting for you. That's when somebody looks through the world through the eyes of Torah. And he reads the newspaper and he sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it's about. Oneg and Nega, all you know the Devar Torah, if you have an ayin in the front, if your eyes see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then everything is great. And if not, everything, life is a Nega. Life is a blemish. And that's going to be the challenge. It's going to be a challenge for every one of you, because even though you're here in yeshiva today, that's not going to last too long, because you'll get caught up in everything else that you're doing, all the work that you have to do, and you're tired, and all of a sudden, and yes, you'll find a way of maybe going to a daf yomi, you'll find a way of learning something, but it's not going to be enough. And the rabbis are trying to grope with this right now. The rabbis in America are trying to figure out, what are we going to do about this? Because if you can't sustain the Simchas HaChaim, if you can't sustain the spirituality that people need, then it's not going to transmit to the next generation. Kids are going to see it, grandkids are going to see it. And this is an issue that we're dealing with. To me, it's the number one issue that I think we face in the frum world, the entire frum world. How do we do this? I have my own answers, I have my own suggestions, but this to me is the number one challenge, the challenge that you're going to see. What's the next challenge?
Will we hear some of the answers?
Next time I come back, you'll have all the answers. Okay? Yes, we'll have time for questions and answers. I'll try to go as quick as I can. The next challenge we have is that we have in the States, and this is Baruch Hashem, when you come to Israel and you live in Israel, you don't have this challenge. But we have an economic model that doesn't work. We have an economic model that's not sustainable in the United States and Canada for people who are from people. If you take tuition, you take cost of housing, and you take everything else that we have, unless you're making enough money to be in the top 3% of your wage earner, you cannot make a living. You can't. You live in Teaneck, you live in the Five Towns, you live in Pico Robinson, you live in Skokie, wherever it is you're going, you're in Toronto. It's the same thing. Everyone has the same issue. And when you have an economic model that doesn't work, eventually it collapses. And we're trying to fix this, and we're trying to do things. And there's a lot that's going on at the OU, and we're working on it very diligently to try to get government funding and other things. But right now we have an economic system that doesn't work, and it's going to be a problem. And you're going to face that problem. You're going to face that problem, because it's real. And we've tried to find a way of doing that. One of the other issues that we have is the fact that we have a shidduch crisis in the Orthodox Jewish community. And I say this, the shidduch crisis is not for you guys. It's for the ladies and the women, and the young girls who are now leaving seminary. It's for your sisters, okay? You know, the guy's great. It's a great world when you're a guy. People are calling all the time. I see it happen all the time. I go out and I meet somebody and they tell me, do you know someone for my daughter? I said, I don't know, I'm not sure. You know, I said, but you have a son. What about your son? Don't worry about him. He's good. He's fine. He's good. The guy, he's great. He's a schlump. He's a nothing, but doesn't make a difference. I mean, he's a guy. Okay, he's wearing pants. It's okay. He will get a shit up. There's no question. You go into any shul, makes no difference where the shul is, and you see one guy. He's sitting there. He's not wearing a talus. Every lady in the women's section is like, oh, did you see a whoa? No talus, you know? I used to have this joke about someone who was in Miami Beach and she's walking on the boardwalk and she meets a man and she says, "Sir," she says, I never saw you here before." He says, "Well, I used to live here, but for the last 25 years, unfortunately, I've been in jail." "Why? What happened?" "I killed my first wife." And so she says, "So you're single." So we're dealing with this. It's a real problem. And we're trying to figure out, what are we going to do about this problem? Because it's going to affect your own family. I'm sure most of you have sisters. You know, I remember one time in my office, my business office, I was going to a wedding. It was a Tuesday night. And I was leaving, and people in my office said to me, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to a wedding." "Tuesday night? Wedding Tuesday night? Who goes to the wedding Tuesday night?" I said, yeah, it's a beautiful occasion. The girl, you know, she's a little bit older. All of us, I feel so happy. I said, "How old is she?" "She's 23. 23? What are you kidding? We don't even start dating until we're 25, and then we get married when we're 30, 23 years old. But it's a problem. And you all know the problem. You've read about it because of the inverse proportion of men to women, and then the guys who are 23 or 24 want to marry girls who are 19. Guys who are 30 want to marry girls who are 19. Guys who are 50 want to marry girls who are 18. You know, so this is what happens. And this is what happens. And the next thing you know, they don't have any. Do I have a solution for that, Rabbi David? Yes. Every one of you marry a girl who's your age or older, okay? If every one of you marries a girl who's your age or older, we'll solve the shit of crisis. But it's a problem, and you know we're seeing it now. I met a person who was a principal of a high school. He told me that he went back for 10 years after the reunion. 10 years after the reunion, so the young ladies are now 28 years old. 15% are not married. That's a big number. And it creates such a tremendous strain in the family. You speak to people who have daughters who are not married, their whole life has just changed and so on. I honestly think when a daughter gets married, the rabbi should make a baruch shepetranik, like under the chuppah, because it's a big issue. And it's an issue for us in the Orthodox community. It's not going away. Another issue that we have, that you're going to be faced with also, unfortunately, there is a perceived lack of honesty and ethics in our community. I go out, I'm a person, I'm in business. That's what I do. Okay, I mean, I spend a lot of my hours working for Klal Yisrael, but I'm in business. And you speak to people who are in the world, the corporate world, and other worlds, and ask them, "Do you really want to do business with a firm person?" And most of them say no. How is that? Where did we get? Why is this such a blemish in our community that when people ask you that question, people say no, they don't want to do it? Choshen mishpat, gone out the window. I mean, you'd rather do business with a non-Jew almost than with a Jew. And so we have to change that. We have to change that perception that we are indeed the most ethical and honest people who are out there. And that's going to be a challenge for us because it's something that's sometimes ingrained in the system. You have to try. It's very hard when you're in business to create a Kiddush Hashem. I always used to look at that, my business. I always used to say I have a fund, the Kiddush Hashem fund. You know what it's for? It's when you have somebody you're arguing with or you have a disagreement with, and the person says, "No, you promised me a bonus, you promised me this." Good, you're right. I take that. That's a part of my ma'aser that I have, a Kiddush Hashem fund. Because it's important. It's important for them. Why is it important? You know why it's important? Because if I do something really great, and I treat my employees the right way, and I treat my vendors the right way, someday you guys are going to be in business, and you're going to try to do a deal with somebody out there, and they're going to say, "Oh, I remember I once did a deal with an Orthodox Jew. I could trust you." So if one person doesn't do it, it affects everybody else. And who are we all about? What are we about? Are we about just shuckling and davening mincha and wearing bigger pair of tzitzis or bigger kippah or whatever it is? Is that really what it's all about? No. It's about us behaving a certain way. So we're going to have to deal. That's an issue that we're going to have to deal with in our Jewish community. And someday you're going to find that that's an issue that you think is also important. We're dealing with what I call a terrible polarization within the Orthodox Jewish world, the Torah world. There's a terrible polarization. There was a time when you could actually talk to people who maybe didn't think exactly the same way that you do, but today that's gone. Unless the person is exactly like you, thinks like you, acts like you, behaves like you, you don't want to have anything to do with them. I decided to have a personal project that I wanted to start. The personal project was I was going to start a Haggadah. It was called the Achdus Haggadah. I was funding it myself, completely myself. No one was giving me any money. And I picked 100 rabbis. 100 rabbis from around the world, left, center, right, but, you know, more or less within the same kind of camp. And I sent him a note, and I said, listen, I'm putting out this book. It's called the Achdus Haggadah. It's not political. It's nothing that Divrei Torah. Give me one Divrei Torah, either that you thought of yourself, or you heard from your Rebbe, or you heard from a Talmud, whatever, it doesn't make a difference. Give me one Divrei Torah. I want to put it in a book. And I even came up with a great tagline. I'm big into marketing and finances. So I have my MBA in. So I came up with a great tagline. For one night, all of us will be on the same page. Wow, I was so excited. I'm going, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to have a whole series, like, you know, Achdus Chomish and Achdus this. Oh, man, this is going to be great. Well, I sent a letter out to 100 rabbis. I got about 20 responses. Now, I sent it out Federal Express, so I know they all got it. And so I started to call some. And especially the rabbis who are maybe a little bit more to the right, but some to the center also. And I said to one of them, I called a Rosh Yeshiva from a very prominent yeshiva. I called him on the phone. The secretary said, what do you want? I told him, okay. Gets on the phone. I said, look, I'm sorry, Rebbe. I sent you something in Federal Express. Maybe you didn't get it. He said, no, I have it. It's on my desk right here. It's right here. He says, you know what? He says, I want to throw it out, but I can't. I said, why not? He said, because you're right. You're 100% right. So I said, so why can't you send me a Divrei Torah? He said, because I can't, because if I do, the people who are to the right of me are going to put me in a certain category, and it's going to jeopardize everything that I do. I said, the people to the right of you are going to do that. Can I tell you the truth? You're the most right-wing person I know. Who's to the right of you? There's no one to the right of you. He says, no, there are. And so what's happened is that all of a sudden, we've allowed the zealots to take over the Orthodox Jewish world. When you want to talk about Achdus and you want to talk getting together, all of a sudden it's those people who have the biggest, you know, mouths and the biggest emails and the biggest blogs or whatever it is have now taken over and have not allowed us to have the beauty of coming together as a group. Tell me, you know what it's like. You go to the airport, you go someplace, and all of a sudden you need a minion. You're not counting. There's a Chabad guy, there's this guy, there's that guy, whatever it is, and so on. A Sephardi, Ashkenaz, and so on. A guy with a white cube. Who cares? You get together, how do you feel? Tell me, how do you feel? You feel great? You feel great. Who are you kidding? We all feel great when that happens. And they've allowed it, they've taken it away from us. These zealots have taken it away from us not to allow us to get together. And this is going to be a big problem because we have issues in Jewish life, and we are going to have issues. The only way you solve them is getting together as a group. You can't solve them when you're in isolation, when everything is just me, 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 me. What am I about? I remember one day when I was president of the Orthodox Union, I had a meeting with the people in the Aguda. And I had a meeting with the president of the Aguda, happened to be in a conference room where there was like a glass door.
Perhaps you should explain what the Aguda is.
Oh, the Aguda is another organization that maybe is a little bit more to the right of where the Orthodox Union is. Not that much, truthfully, but maybe a little bit more to the right. More the Lakewood yeshivas and maybe Torah Vadas and places like that. And so when I had a meeting with the president of the Aguda, and the people who were working in the office were walking by, and they looked and they saw me and the other person together, they kept saying, wow, two of you together. Why should it be so hard for us to get together? What are the differences that are so great that we can't get together? But we're dealing with this polarization. We're dealing with this terrible polarization. I think there's a lot that can be done with it. Honestly, I do, and I've written articles about it, about spending an Achdus Shabbos and taking rabbis from one shul and taking them to another shul and having them get to know one another, putting them together on a panel. I've worked very hard to do that. And if you break down the barriers, you see it works. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy. It's going to be an issue that we have, and it's something that I think we all have to deal with. Another issue is, and I talked about assimilation, and I talked about what's going on in the world. What's our responsibility as from Jews? You're going to grow up. You're going to go out in the workplace. You're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a businessman. You're going to be a psychologist. Whatever you're going to be, you're going to meet people. What's our responsibility to those people? You see, because I really come to realize that people talk about Kiruv. You know, what does Kiruv mean? What do people think Kiruv? What does Kiruv mean? So in certain places, Kiruv means that you meet somebody, and within 15 minutes, they now are wearing tzitzis. They're learning a Bnei Brak, whatever. That's art scroll, guys, okay? You want to read an art scroll book? Read an art scroll book. That's not life. That's not what life's about. I want to tell you, let me tell you, that Rabbi Olshan did mention that probably the best thing that I'm involved in is an organization called Partners in Torah, which I'm the chairman of, which basically puts together people who are more knowledgeable with people who are not so knowledgeable, birthright kids who come back, all kind of people who really, what do I do? But what I do is I really take people who are like-minded, who are mentors, who could work with somebody else. So I want to tell you a Kiruv story. A Kiruv story. It's not going to be in the art school books because they don't think it's Kiruv. I think it's Kiruv. In my world of partners in Torah, I learn with somebody on the phone. Half hour, 45 minutes, a week, and you form a kesher and so on. I want to tell you about somebody I learned with. His name was Lenny. That was his name. He was an investment banker. I would learn with him on the phone once a week for 45 minutes. He belonged to Reform Synagogue, which he didn't go to, by the way. He never went to it. I learned with him on the phone. We learned Perkei Avos. We learned other things. And after maybe a few months, I said, you know, Lenny, I thought of something. I don't know, what's your Hebrew name? Do you have a Hebrew name? He said, I don't think I have one. I said, you have to have a Hebrew name someplace. I mean, go back to the old records, ask some old relatives, find out. And every week I'd ask him, by the way, did you find out? Do you have a Hebrew name? Finally, one week, he calls me on the phone, so excited. I found out my name. It's Eliezer Nachum. I said, Eliezer Nachum, that's the most beautiful name in the whole world. Eliezer, the trusted servant of Rome, you know, the son of Aaron. Nachum, you know, that means you're giving comfort and consolation to people. What a beautiful name. I said, I will never again call you Lenny. Eliezer Nachum, that's your name. Shem Shenichas Lebris, Ken Yekonis, the Torah, the Chuppah, the partners in Torah. I call you Eliezer Nachum. And every week I call him. I call him on the phone, and his secretary was not Jewish. I would say, by the way, I'd say, call, and I'd say, is Eliezer Nachum there? And she said, Mr. Savitsky, he's waiting for your call. That's what she'd say. I learned with him. After a few months, I said, by the way, Eliezer Nachum, I said, you belong to Reform Synagogue, right? I said, you're a Jew, right? Jews don't like to spend money for nothing, right? We like to get something for our money. We that's the way we are. I said, why don't you go once in a while? If you belong to Reform Synagogue, go once in a while. And so he goes on a Friday night. I said, okay, how was it? Terrible. I hated it. What was wrong? Ah, they had a cantor, they had a rabbi, they gave a sermon. Ah, it was terrible, I didn't enjoy it. He said, but they had a Torah class where the assistant rabbi, whatever he or she was, okay, would give a Torah class. And he said, I went to the Torah class. A very smart guy, he said, I loved it. And so he said, you know what, my wife and I are going to start to go. And he starts to go. He goes to the Torah class a few weeks. After about 2 months, I'm still learning with him once a week on the phone. He says to me, guess what happened? They asked me to give the class. I said, really? He said, yes. They want me to give one of the Torah classes in 2 months from now, only on 7 Pesukim. He gave me the Pesukim and so on. He said, could you help me? I said, sure. And so the next 7 weeks, we learned Rashi, and we learned Sforno and Abarbanel, and I gave him other Peirushim, and he was loaded up, and I couldn't wait. I said, don't wait for next Thursday to call me. Call me on Sunday. He called me on Sunday. He says to me, you wouldn't believe it. They loved it. They want me to give one once a month. Wow, you understand? He's not a person. He doesn't keep kosher. He doesn't keep Shabbos. But he goes now and he gives a Torah class. Baruch Hashem, we come to a great event in Jewish world. What was it? The Siyum HaShas. All of you know what the Siyum HaShas was. In great MetLife Stadium, 90,000 people. It's an incredible event. He calls me up and he says to me, I read about this event. You think I should go? I said, I think you'd love it. It would be great. I said, I can't get you a ticket because there's nothing near me. He said, well, I'll get there online. They sell tickets. I'll buy a ticket. No problem. I said, okay, buy a ticket. I said, I'll find you. Don't worry about it. And he says to me, I have to ask you one question. You think I should wear a yarmulke? I said, you know, you don't have to, but I think it's a good idea. He said, I don't have one. I don't have a yarmulke. I said, you don't even have a yarmulke? Go to the local funeral parlor, okay? Just find one of those little black ones they have there. You know, they'll be happy to give you to you. Anyway, Siyum HaShas comes. I never met him. I learned with him for over a year and a half. I never met the man in my life other than we spoke on the phone. And I never talked to him about Shabbos and Kashrus. I just learned with him on the phone about Torah. Siyum HaShas comes. After a few minutes, I walk over to the section and I look. And there in this section are 5,000 Bava V'Chassidim wearing Strimlach, Bekesha, Gartels. And there's one guy with a little black yarmulke. Eliezer Nachum, my guy. I see him, he comes over to me, I give him a hug and a kiss, and I can't believe it, we were learning for a year and a half. And I bring him over to my section, they start playing some music, and I start dancing with him and Rabbi Gewirtz, and he takes pictures, someone takes a video. He loves it, and so on and so forth. After a while, it said it's time to move on to someone else, to learn with someone else. It's always good to find another chavrusa. He starts learning with someone else. Remember, he's still not Shomer Shabbos yet, and he never will be, by the way. He never will be Shomer Shabbos. What happens? He calls me up. He says, you wouldn't believe what happened. So what happened? He said, you know, I have three boys. I said, I know. We've spoken about it. My first two boys intermarried. I remember learning with him on the phone the Sunday he had to go to the christening of his granddaughter. Could you imagine what kind of nachas that is for somebody to have to go to that? He says, my youngest son, he goes to Duke University. He's getting his PhD in psychology. He called me up on Thanksgiving and he said to me, Dad, set an extra place at the table. I have a surprise for you. And he calls me and says to me, you know what the surprise was? He found a very lovely Jewish girl. And he decided that he wants to get married to this Jewish girl. And he said, my friend Eliezer Nachum said to his son, tell me why. Why did you decide to just marry a Jewish girl? Your two brothers didn't. He said, because I saw that video that you took when they had that big party for studying the Talmud. And I said, you know what? I know how important learning is to you. And I saw you dancing with those two rabbis. Me, okay. Okay, I saw you dancing. This shows you what a rabbi is supposed to look like, okay? I saw you dancing with those two rabbis. And you know what? I want that for my kids. I don't want to be outside. I don't care about my brothers, what they did. I want my kids to be Jewish. And you know what? I want to give you Jewish grandchildren. I want to give you Jewish grandchildren. Could you imagine that? Someone saying that, I want to give you Jewish grandchildren. That's a success story, okay? Do I know what's going to happen with his son and with that grandchild someday? Who knows? Maybe he'll be here in Torah Shraga in 20 years. Who knows what's going to happen? But that's what it's all about. And so we have a tremendous obligation and responsibility and opportunity to change the Jewish world, because this is one of the last times we're going to have this. With what's going on in America, we now have a responsibility. As from Jews, as Orthodox Jews, as Torah Jews, we have a responsibility to do that and to make sure that everybody understands what we're all about. And that's an important thing that's going to happen also. One or two other issues that I don't have time to really delve into them. One important issue that you're going to have in your life is the future role of what women are going to play in the Orthodox Jewish world. What do they do? Where do they fit in? What's the hashgacha? You know, where are they going? What are they doing? And we have, this is a major issue dealing with. OU has dealt with it extensively. I'm not sure that we handled it exactly right or not, but I think we did a good job. We try to do the best job we can, but we're seeing it all over. We're seeing a polarization on the left and on the right. Who knows where it's going to go? Who knows what's going to happen? But today, even in certain magazines, if you have a picture of a woman, that means, you know, forget about it. You're sending a message. You're sending a message to the world. If I have pictures, I'm a certain Gan Hashkafa. If I don't have, I'm not a different Gan Hashkafa. We're seeing this all over. How it plays out and what happens with it, I'm really not sure. The relationship with Eretz Yisrael. What's going to be the relationship with Eretz Yisrael? What's the Torah world's relationship with Eretz Yisrael? How are we going to make sure that we have Hakaras HaTov for what's going on here? You know, say what you want, and I know that people say, oh, Eretz Yisrael and the army and the Medina and so on and so forth. The fact is, this is the only Jewish country in the world. The fact is that Shabbos is Shabbos, and Yontif is Yontif. And in the army, they still have kashrus, and they still have an Erev. Maybe it's not the kind that someone likes or they don't like, but it's a Jewish place. And we have to find a way of making the world understand that. And you, more than anyone else, are going to have to learn to defend the state of Israel. You're going to learn to defend the state of Israel when people come against BDS, and people talk about it, because you're going to be wearing a yarmulke. You should understand, when you're wearing a yarmulke, you now have become a representative of the Orthodox Jewish world. You are the expert on everything. They're going to stop you and they're going to ask you, why is Israel, why are they an apartheid state? I was in South Africa dealing with the South African government, and they were having a big machlokas with me about Israel's apartheid state, and I tried to explain that it's not. We have to understand our biblical right to this land. We have to understand why this is our land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us, that we never left it, that we prayed for it, we fasted for it, we yearned for it, we longed for it all of our life. We never abandoned it. There was no Yeish, okay? It always was, and we always had Jews who lived here. But you're going to have to learn to defend that, because people are going to ask you those questions. And that's going to be an obligation that I think from people are going to have. We're going to have, as you go back to the States, you're going to have to figure out how you have leadership roles in other organizations, how you can be part of the general world. I'm part of I pride myself that I'm not just part of the Orthodox world, I'm part of the Jewish world. And I could represent them. I hope represent them well. There's a lot of other things we have, but there's going to be great opportunities for you. The Orthodox Jewish world is growing, proliferating, getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're going to be the future. But these are some of the issues that you're going to have to deal with and you're going to have to figure out. And if you could figure them out and you know about them, because look, at least you're hearing about them, maybe for the first time. There's a lot more to discuss, but you're going to be on the highway of life, and that highway of life is going to have a lot of curves and going to have a lot of different nuances to it. At least you should understand what you're going to be facing and the challenges you're going to be facing. I feel positive about it because I think, you know, when I look around here in Yeshiva Torah Shraga and I see the kind of boys that are here and I see them when they come back, they're fantastic. They're unbelievable. There's nothing they can't do. But Baruch Hashem, we're strong. We're stronger than ever. Eretz Yisrael is stronger than ever. Torah Jewry is stronger than ever. But we have our issues and we have to figure out how to deal with them. Once we deal with them, we'll be fine. So I don't have a lot of time because I know this is over at a few minutes, right? So maybe I could answer a few questions and we'll go from there. I guess I did a great job. All of you know all the answers and that's it. Okay. Rabbi David, what do you think?
There are many questions.
How much time do we have? 5 minutes?
No, 15.
15? Oh, I didn't know that. I thought we had more. Okay. Let me take some questions.
Speak about how there's a lack of spirituality in some modern communities back in America.
Not just modern. Any Orthodox Jewish community. Yeah. Regardless of whether it's not modern, it's everybody.
So how can we as Bachman going back to America try to implement more spirituality into our communities?
I think you have a good role to play in that. I think that, you know, you have to figure out how you could do more teaching and more learning with people. I think it's important for you to do more learning with Balabatim, who were basically there. I think it's important for you to do it yourself, because if you do it, it's going to give you the spirituality that you need also. You're going to, you know, you come back from Eretz Yisrael, you know, I always look at the guys who come back from Eretz Yisrael. They're the ones davening Shemoneh Esrei for another 10 minutes, you know, but then I watch them the next year, it's 5 minutes, and then it's the same time. Then it's maybe a little bit less, whatever it is, and so on. But yeah, I think it's great if you become a teacher. Look, you know, in Partners in Torah, Rabbi Goritz was the founder of Partners in Torah. People used to say to him all the time, "Tell me, how many people you make from?" He'd say, "I don't know. I made every mentor from." I know one thing: when you learn with people and you learn with them, you learn Torah. You yourself just get reinforced because Torah is magic. You see, that's what it's all about. People don't understand the magic and the majesty of Torah, what it does. It just gives us a certain elevation, a certain ruchnius. So if you do that, and also then, also, how do you act? And how do you be? You want to give people want to be like you. You know, I want to be like Mike, what was that thing they used to say, whatever, and so on. But I'm saying, who do people want to emulate? You think they want to emulate a lot of guys? I mean, people say to me, yeah, I know this guy, you know, you can't trust him. He's disrespectful. He doesn't have Derech Eretz, but Shemoneh Esrei is 25 minutes longer. That doesn't win anybody over, okay? But I think if you really want to give spirituality, you have to show people that there's a simplest achayim. You know, there were people who used to live on my block, and they won the lottery, okay? I'm telling you, they had a simchas achayim. Every time you looked at them, you knew they were happy. We won the lottery. We have the Torah. We have something that's incredible. We have something that's so great. It's just amazing what we have. It's so much better than the rest of the world. So we have to figure out a way of making people understand that. And when they see you, and they see you glow because you love the Torah, and that's just, but you love the way of life. I mean, like, look, the way of life is, I have a speech I give sometimes, it's called, "Is it a burden or a privilege to be an Orthodox Jew?" Because sometimes people think it's really a burden. But it's not, it's a privilege. A privilege doesn't always mean that it's easy. Privilege doesn't mean it's easy. Privilege means that you have an opportunity to do something no one else could do. You know, you live in the world, we go about the world, we look like a lot of other people, but there's something inside of us which is so different. And if we do that, you know what, you'll have spirituality. Spirituality, what does spirituality mean? It means that you feel you have a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it does. And how do you get the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You get it with tefillah, you get it with learning, you get it with chesed, you get it with a lot of other things. That's what you do. Because you walk around and you say, there's a purpose to my life. And if there's a purpose to my life, then I have spirituality. When people see you, they want to emulate you. And that's what I think you have to do. But you guys can do it. There's no question about it. But it's a challenge because it gets hard. You know, it gets hard to, you know, you work and you work in an office and you go and you're catching the 6:12 train and then your life is coming back by the 7:14 train and, you know, everything, and you have what kind of problems and what kind of issues. It's not so easy, but you have to find a way of making it important to your life.
You certainly be getting that. You hope one day we should be making Aliyah, but at the same time, we are the next generation of people who are going to be in Aliyah. We are the next generation of people who are going back to revamp American Jewry. What's more important, to stay and help American Jewry or to come?
His grandfather, Yona, was Rabbi Braverman.
Listen, I'd be happy if every single person wanted to make Aliyah. But I'm also a realist. So, you know, last year, how many people do you think from America made Aliyah? I think the number is about 3,000 to 3,500. 5.7 million Jews, 3,500, 2,000, 4,000. The numbers are minuscule. And most of them come from the from community, just about, not everybody, but most of them come. So, you know, we could have a lot more. Natan Sharansky used to always say, I remember saying him saying to us one time at the Jewish Agency, he said, you know who I blame the most for not making Aliyah? You, pointing to me. I said, why do you blame me? Why is it my fault? He says, because you live so close to Kennedy Airport. That's what he said, okay. But the point of the matter is, we're not making Aliyah. Halavai, everyone would want to make Aliyah. It's not going to happen. If we have next year 30,000 Jews making Aliyah, believe me, it will be all over the Jerusalem Post and so on. I hope that everybody can make Aliyah, but for the vast amount of people, they're not going to. But it's okay, you know, it's fun, you know. And there'll be enough here in Eretz Israel. There are new ways now in Eretz Israel. People travel back and forth. They do all kinds of things. So there's a different kind of Aliyah. There'll be plenty here also. I remember one time going to one of the third world countries and meeting with the Israeli ambassador, and he was talking about, you know, Israel and so on, and someone asked him the question, should we all make Aliyah? What's going to happen? You know, he says, no, if you all made Aliyah, who knows if we'd have enough resources for you and whatever it is. I said, that's not what Rav Cook said. Rav Cook said, it's because everyone's Zavat Chalav Lezvach. It flows. How many people come? You have 5 million? There's enough for 5 million. You have 50 million? There'll be enough for 50 million. It's okay. But Halavai, more people should make Aliyah. I really honestly believe that that is the thing that should be done, but it's very hard. Let's face it. It's not going to happen. If we get the numbers up a little bit, we'll be good. Yeah.
Very easy for us to relate to what you're saying. But what would you tell someone who's already been in America for, let's say, they're out of the year in Israel, or say they even go to the year in Israel, and they don't understand how the person you're coming from? What angle would you
mean to get them to come to Eretz Israel, or to what?
Just in general, to have like this uplifted level of living as a religious human being in America.
You know, God lives in Widmir. And he also lives in Great Neck. And he lives in Boca Raton, not just Yerushalayim. So you can find that Simchas HaChaim and that spirituality wherever you go. Eretz Yisrael is just the whole Ruach and the whole Sfiva allows it to happen more easily. But you could find that any place that you go. I mean, it's just a question of trying to understand a little bit about life and understand what we're all about. Look, life is very difficult. You know, in the final analysis, you know, we don't understand it. We don't understand where we come from, we don't understand where we're going, but we know there's a mission in life, we know there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Once you understand that, and you get that by learning, and you get that by Torah, and you get that by finding somebody who's a role model, also look, remember something also. Now you're in yeshiva, you're sitting and you're learning all day. But when you have an hour to learn, look, Rabbi Olshin told you about Daf Yomi. So Baruch Hashem, I know I'm my fifth cycle of Daf Yomi. Daf Yomi is not for everybody. It's not. And if that's the only thing you're learning, I'm not so sure that's the right thing either. I go to sometimes shul, and I go to the 6 o'clock minyan, I see guys who got up 5:30, and I give them all the credit in the world. Trust me, I have the greatest respect for them. They're sitting there for 100 daf and zvachim and chulin, and their eyes are glazed over, and they have no idea what's going on. If they learned a little bit of Nacha, they learned Pasha Shavua, they listened to Rabbi David Shear, trust me, they would get a lot more out of it. They really, really would. And I tell this to people. Daf Yomi is great and it's wonderful, but it's not the only way. Look, it forces you. I call it the Talmudic treadmill, which is why I never want to get off. But I will tell you the truth. Now that I'm going through my fifth cycle, I want to get off that treadmill as fast as I can every day because I have so much stuff I want to do. I love Parsha and I love Rambam and I love Halacha. And the more time I spend on Daf Yomi, I can't spend it on that. So I try to find but I listen to it online, basically. So I go online in the morning and basically I look for the shortest shir. Not lying, I'm telling you the truth, okay? And I try to find the shortest shir that's going to give me what I need to get by today in Chulin. Because I want to learn the Parsha so much. I love the Parsha, and I love learning Or HaChaim. I love learning that stuff. I want to do it. So you should find the things you want to learn. Find the Rebbe you want to learn with. And then life, it's so great. It's so wonderful. It's so fantastic. And when it's fantastic, you know what's going to happen? Why do you ask for every morning, what do you say? Lilmud Lamed. You have to say that every single morning when you're davening. Because when you like something and you love it, you teach it over. You know how boring it is? You meet somebody who's a mathematics professor. He says, see, good, can I tell you the theory about something? I go, what are you talking about? But if I tell you a vart and a parsha? I mean, I say, I've been on a plane sitting with a person who's Jewish and knows nothing. And I say, by the way, can I tell you a little bit about what we're studying in Torah? Yeah, can you mind? Great. That's the power of what we have. And it's beautiful. once you know how to harness it, it's beautiful. So, you know, hopefully people will come to Eretz Yisrael, but people could turn out to be very fine Jews without ever having spent a year in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe one more question, or that's it? All right, guys, listen, you're the future. I have a lot of confidence in what you're doing, and Mi'ez Hashem will make Am Yisrael, will continue to make Am Yisrael strong as it always is. Thank you so much. I have a